Welcome to a special IWA podcast where we're focusing today on the European elections. I'm Jess Blair and I'm joined today by the IWA's Lee Waters, Cathy Owens of Derry Consultancy and our guest panellist Professor Roger Scully of the Wales Governance Centre. Sunday night saw the results from last week's elections to the European Parliament finally released to much nail-biting from the political parties. But after months of UKIP-themed speculation, the status quo remains. So, Roger Scully, is this much of a surprise?
I think it is a surprise that UKIP actually did quite as well as they did in Wales. If we look at how UKIP performed across Britain, their performance in England was, if anything, slightly at the lower end of expectations. They performed about as expected in terms of share of the vote in Scotland. In Wales, that was the surprise, that UKIP did quite as well in Wales. I mean, the polls had picked up UKIP starting to attract more and more support, Labour starting to slip, but the extent to which that went, with UKIP almost beating Labour for first place, that was a surprise.
Okay, and Cathy, what are your thoughts on the results from Sunday night?
Well, I think each of the parties are taking a sort of quick snapshot of what has happened this week, and each of them probably has a little bit of learning from that. So, for example, on the Labour side, you might think, why didn't they see this coming? Or if they did, they didn't share that very well. And then there's a slightly longer term view, and I think we'll be going back to Roger to find out whether that UKIP vote holds up. That's going to be key about what each of the parties do next.
I think it's interesting the Conservative vote in Wales held up as well as it did, considering last time round was a high watermark for them, and they only dropped, I think, around 3 points from last time, which for a party in office in the middle of austerity is a remarkable achievement. I don't think it's at all surprising UKIP did well across the country. I take Roger's point about they might have been expected to do less well in Wales, especially given the kitchen sink that was thrown at them by the UK press. The Times and the Telegraph went after them for some time and dredged up all sorts of stuff, and Nigel Farage got himself into a bit of hot water. So you certainly stress tested. So given that, the voters clearly felt that even though there were some question marks about this party, they were still prepared to invest their vote in them as a protest. And inevitably, this is a protest election, which explains the implosion of the Lib Dems, having once been the receptacle of the protest vote. That is no longer the case. I think what's really interesting is why Plaid Cymru aren't the recipient of a protest vote. They are all delighted and relieved to have kept Jill Evans when privately they thought she was gone, and interestingly, a lot of them were quite happy about that. But I think there's a big question mark for Plaid Cymru is, if they're not seen as a party of protest in Wales, what are they seen as?
Cathy.
I absolutely agree with that. They found a bit of a plateau and they seem to be bumbling along a little bit on that, and they are going to have to do something quite different at the next election to make any changes to that. They're trying to currently position themselves slightly to the left of Labour, and when you come to a general election, which is a little bit more presidential between Conservatives and Labour, in the most part, that they're going to have to find a slightly different voice. I would still contend, however, in the long term, the Conservatives should take more concern, I think, perhaps in Wales, because where UKIP did well in North East Wales and in the South Wales valleys, you might expect that in the valleys at least, Labour will probably win those seats. They should be confident of winning those seats at the general election. I think in North East Wales, it looks to me that those seats might be a bit softer for both the Conservatives and Labour, and I think that's where we might see UKIP having the most impact on general election results if their vote continues to stay at this level or doesn't drop too far.
Yes, I mean, there's very little sign from these results that UKIP are likely to win a seat in Wales at the general election, but their vote is at the sort of level where it could make a significant material difference to who does win the seat. And I think particularly in some of those seats, as Cathy's saying, in the eastern part of Wales, in the northeast, notably, you can certainly see UKIP potentially influencing the result.
To what end, do you think, Roger? To whose benefit?
Well, the stereotype of UKIP has been the BNP and Blazers, or whatever, that they take overwhelmingly conservative votes. UKIP have themselves quite self-consciously been increasingly reaching out, though, to the sort of voters that radical right parties win in quite a few other European countries, what's often termed the left behinds. Mm-hmm. Many of them are people who traditional Labour support, but often people who aren't particularly sort of socially liberal, not that impressed maybe by the developments of the Labour Party or in other countries, other mainstream centre-left parties, their moves in a socially liberal direction. People more generally who feel sort of left behind by the sorts of social and economic changes in their societies, overwhelmingly white, older voters, economically relatively marginal, extremely dissatisfied, some decades ago would have been strongly Labour supporting. Some of those people in recent times possibly would have been attracted to the Conservative, working class Conservative support, the sort of people that might have been attracted, say, by William Hague's give you back your country sort of rhetoric, or Michael Howard's dog whistle politics. And UKIP are attracting a lot of that sort of vote.
And I think that's a bit of a challenge for the Labour Party here, because from that you might see a bit of a shift in London in terms of Labour strategy around trying to reach back those disenfranchised, disaffected Labour voters. But I would be a bit concerned that if they do that only through a sort of London lens, then you might miss out on some of those Welsh voters, because the Assembly is responsible for a lot of day-to-day issues, then you need a slightly nuanced Welsh version of that response here. And is it, you know, can the Labour Party work together to re-strategise and to think about those issues and to put forward that sort of joint approach here? I think that's a little bit problematic at the moment. That quite a lot of work needs to be done to make sure they can do that.
Yeah, I mean, a London lens might be particularly problematic because, of course, in London, Labour actually did very well in the council elections and in the European elections. It's in other areas, including Wales, perhaps Labour's strongest historic bastion, where they've been doing less well. I think one thing that's very clear from the election is the Labour sort of UK-wide campaign was a bit of a disaster, and in particular Ed Miliband, is fantastically unappealing to much of Labour's historic working class support. And I think if you were trying to design a Labour leader who would be unappealing to traditional working class Labour support in Wales, and you came up with Ed Miliband, that would be a pretty good effort.
I think this was a bad result for Labour, and I think their vote is soft. And I think you can see from how the vote has dropped in recent years, Labour have a problem which they're pretty complacent about, at least in public, and they need to take this election as a warning to really seriously think through their strategy. I think what's really interesting for me about this election is an emerging pattern about the northeast of Wales being different and potentially getting more different. The YouGov poll before the election showed that in the Assembly elections, UKIP could win up to 8 seats. Now, I think we need to treat that with some caution, but nonetheless, the prospect of UKIP having some Assembly members, and let's remember 4 or 5 years ago, the prospect of BNP having some Assembly members was a realistic prospect. UKIP seems to have replaced that threat. If they're going to be drawn from North Wales in particular, and the North Wales, North East Wales politics is going to become increasingly an extension of the North West of England politics, and low turnouts are going to accentuate this, the fracturing of what is already a delicate sense of Welsh politics will intensify, and I think that raises a whole series of issues.
Okay, so with that said, what do the parties do now?
Well, in terms of responding to the UKIP rise, I think one of the things that all of the mainstream, traditional parties need to do is to stop fighting UKIP on UKIP's turf. Fighting them, allowing UKIP to be talking all the time about UKIP sort of issues on European immigration and about the trustworthiness and calibre of the political class, and be dragging UKIP onto other political territory, saying to you, okay, you want to be taken seriously as a mainstream political party? Well, mainstream political parties have serious policies on taxation, on health, on education, on crime and on social issues, and actually trying to get their political agenda to look in some detail of what UKIP are actually saying on that. Well, I think UKIP are much more vulnerable than, if the debate stays forever on what people think of traditional political leaders, if it stays on Europe, if it stays on immigration, then I think UKIP are going to continue to do well. UKIP have to be dragged onto territory where they're much more vulnerable and potentially uncomfortable.
So on the Wales report last night, Nathan Gill, the UKIP MEP who's just been elected, refused to be drawn on these other issues, saying that it was all going to come up in the manifesto to be released in September. Is that a kind of diversion tactic?
Well, it's not entirely a diversion tactic, because there are many issues on which UKIP don't have stated policies at the moment. In some other areas, their policies, I think, don't necessarily stand up to detailed scrutiny. I mean, the Times addressed it some while ago that UKIP had up to $100 billion of uncosted spending commitments. The other parties, I think, have to say and help the media say, well, UKIP, if you really want to be taken seriously, then you're going to be evaluated on the same terms as any other mainstream serious political party. And to drag UKIP into that territory and not to be sort of, having UKIP evaluated on whether people like Nigel Farage or whether people think that UKIP is racist or not, whether they approve of UKIP's policies on immigration in Europe, but to drag them onto the other territory where I think, frankly, a lot of the people that UKIP has been getting support from would then start to think, well, actually, I don't like what UKIP is saying on education. I don't like what they're saying on health. I don't like their policies on taxation. And that's where I think they're potentially much more vulnerable.
Cathy?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that, the protest vote for people on low incomes in Wales shouldn't really be with UKIP. So something's gone a bit wrong there. And that means there is opportunity for the Labour Party to regroup, re-strategise, but it has to be, as I said before, I think with a little bit of a Welsh lens. And just on Welsh seats in terms of the general election, going back to the Lib Dems just for a moment, I think they've got a real problem because each of the seats that they hold, there's a strong, credible alternative with a very good candidate. And I think they are in real trouble for the general election because I don't think they're going to be able to get this vote back from those disenfranchised voters. They might have to go through a cycle of elections first. And it doesn't really matter which one of the leaders it is. They're going to be punished for going into coalition with the Conservatives, and they might have to grin and bear it for a while.
Lee?
I think at the UK level, I don't think UKIP poses any serious long-term threat. I think history shows this, that the mainstream parties are very good at assimilating protest movements. The SDP, their issues were assimilated. The Green Party, their issues were assimilated. So I don't think there's much of a UKIP longer term threat there. I think the bigger threat is in so-called second order elections, like the Euro ones, and especially from our point of view, the Welsh ones, where, as has been discussed, their disruptive effect on other parties is considerable, and I think people like Leighton Andrews in the Valley seats will be worried about UKIP. I think Plaid should be worried about UKIP because they're going to displace them in Valley seats, and I agree with what Cathy says about the Lib Dems. So I think UKIP will be a very vocal and strong disruptive force. I don't think they are coherent, but that's their appeal. And I don't think we should dismiss that just because they're not coherent. That may matter to political watchers. That's part of the attraction to the disaffected people who have been drawn into this.
Well, that's the challenge, I think, for the other parties, to make UKIP's coherence or potential incoherence matter to the voters. At the moment, clearly it doesn't for a large number of voters, and the other parties have to make it become important to the voters.
Okay, great. Cathy, Lee and Roger, thank you for your time, and thank you for listening. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, and let us know your thoughts on Twitter with the hashtag IWA Podcast.